Jen and I try to lose our minds on the 222 Paranormal Podcast.
We've already lost them a long time ago, probably 200 episodes ago. Yes, people, this is our 200th episode.
Is it?
I think so. Nope, 201.
201? Oh, well, 201, we're close.
Everybody.
So Chris Sumner was 200 last week. It's awesome.
You know, all the shows, it's just like crazy. This is 201 weeks worth of shows. Holy moly.
Hey, we can't, or we can't, other podcasts can't say that.
That's true. There's not very many who have.
I had a guy email me today. He's like, hey, man, can you listen to my podcast? I'm like, yeah, sure. I'll listen to it, of course, you know. He was on episode 16. He's like, I'm on 16. I'm like, that's good.
That's nice.
Hey, we were on 16 at one time also.
I had this guy on Twitter. He does like exploration or something, you know, of abandoned places or whatever.
Urban exploring?
Yeah. And he said, oh, are you a fan? And I was like, buddy. Don't flatter yourself. I'm like, well, check out my podcast. I have 200 episodes. Oh, cool. But as
hey,
we're...
you know, that's pretty good, though, because the average podcast doesn't last over 7 shows.
Yeah,
so.
Interesting. And I was thinking about podcasting today. Like, I don't know. Like, what do our view... What do you guys listen... You know, you listeners like? Do you like certain lengths? Do you like certain content? What do you like most about Paranormal Podcast, not just ours, but in general?
Yeah,
leave us a message on our Facebook page. Anyways, Joe, as we're taping today,
okay,
it is May 7th.
Yes, it says that right there on my computer.
Which is, tonight is a full moon, and guess which full moon it is.
The one that's over there.
Nah.
And then, well, I do know that they're everybody's saying it's so much bigger. Well, it's not really bigger, folks.
That's what she said. It's the flower moon.
Oh.
So just, we love staring at the moon and the stars and the space and all that. So I just thought I'd give our listeners a little info about the flower moon.
Okay.
So the full moon of May is known as the flower moon. It's to signify the flowers that bloom during this month. There's a myriad of wildflowers which bloom in May in the northern hemisphere, where these traditional full moons were originated. So I think if you guys go back, we went and did a whole show about full moons and like the different full moons. So the Native Americans, every full moon would have a different name.
Yeah.
Indicating like the different seasons. So there, one was like the beaver full moon and the harvest moon and the strawberry moon. So, you know, you can go back and check out that show. It was really interesting, even though, you know, I'm not bragging that we did it or anything, but the info was interesting. Are you a fan? Kenny Rogers. Yeah, you have to watch or listen to our other show about that.
I was going to post on the podcast support group Facebook page, I was going to post a question. Is any podcasters ever had someone come up and say they were the host of your podcast?
Oh, my gosh.
Because, I mean, when I wear my 222 Paranormal Podcast shirt, I have so many people go, oh, that's cool. I listen to that all the time. And I actually had one person come up and say, yeah, that's cool. I listen to your show all the time. I'm like, oh, cool. He's like, that's such a good show, Jim. I'm like, no, it's Joe. Oh, you're not Jim Harold? I'm like, that's the other paranormal podcast.
Well,
that's the original paranormal podcast.
222, people.
Yep.
If you haven't heard us say it by now. Oh, Joe Bean. So exciting. Anything else paranormal going on in your life?
Nothing is paranormal in my life right now. Oh, yes. Before we started the show, I drank my Sprite, and I said I couldn't make it in the garbage can unless I bounced off the floor, and I bounced off the floor and went right in the can.
He made this, like, miraculous shot. I'm like, there's no way ever he would make the shot, and he did. So your curse is lifted, Joe. You now have blessings.
I'm
going to
be
no
a basketball
curses.
Star.
Speaking of curses, so our topic of the show today is so interesting. You know, I love anything jewelry related, and I love curses, so here we go.
So, Jen, what is a curse?
A curse
I got it over here.
Tell us what a curse is. Okay. So the definition of curse is a prayer or an invocation for harm or injury to come upon one. It's also evil or misfortune.
Evil
spell or casting that you wish upon somebody to cause them harm or curse an object, a place, or a person.
Yep.
A curse is also a profanity, but we don't use that here.
That's
in this
a curse. Yes. We have before.
I said a bad word. Ooh, don't tell my mom, who was on the show too. You guys have to go back and listen to her show.
She wants to be back on.
I know. That was fun though. Yeah. It was really fun. She had some interesting things to say. So give you guys a little bit of background about what we're talking about today. So we are talking about the Hope Diamond and the curse of the Hope Diamond. The Hope Diamond, Joe,
yeah.
Maybe you could describe it just a little bit.
Well, it goes back all the way to 800 BC is when the timeline started. I have the whole timeline printed up in front of me, and it's been owned by probably 50 or 60 people over the years, and it's in the Smithsonian now. But back in India in the 1600s, it was actually mined out of the earth, and it's said that they put it into a statue as a third eye. And what it is, it's a blue diamond. It was found in the ground, obviously, and the Indians don't cut their diamonds because they feel that if they cut the diamond, it loses its essence. Mm-hmm. And it's loses its, or it's like bad luck. Mm-hmm. To cut the diamond. And they preserve it because unless it has like fractures or that, they preserve it in its original form. This was a blue diamond that was found, and the reason it's blue is because it has impurities of boron trapped in the crystals of the diamond, mm-hmm. which it's like 2% of boron. I'm not positive the exact number, but it's a real tiny amount, which causes the whole diamond to turn blue.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
So this diamond was originally uncut. Mm-hmm. It's been cut several times. And we'll talk about that as we go along, the different times it was cut and that. But one of the really odd things about this diamond is when it is bathed in ultraviolet light, it actually, what they call phosphorizes, it glows red.
Ooh, now, that's scary.
The big thing about that is blue diamonds don't glow red.
Only this particular?
Only that diamond itself. It's the only one they've ever known.
Because it's cursed. Yeah,
that's what they say, which is so bizarre because, you know, they, like I said, it's because they think it has the curse in it is because it's red.
That is amazing. I would love to see that. I wonder if there's a video of that.
There's a photo, mm-hmm. and I was watching some video on it today to learn more about the diamond, and they said it was the video I watched was the only time they've ever showed it live on television of it glowing red. So I don't know if it's out there or not.
It might be somewhere. Mm-hmm. It was probably on In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Yes.
All right. So the origin of the curse of the Hope Diamond.
All right.
Now remember, it says during the Cold War and public anxiety was very high. Okay. So there was many letters written to President Eisenhower during the time of the Cold War. Anxiety was really high and people were telling him, turn down the diamond. Don't accept the Hope because of its curse. You know, people tried to discount the curse, but with your timeline and all of the people that have been affected that have owned, there's just something more than, okay, somebody has some bad luck. There's so many different people. Okay, so now, you know, people say that the curse is made up.
Mm-hmm.
And it also kind of tells the story of the diamond. So it goes back that the original blue diamond had been roughly cut from 112 carats when French diamond merchant Jean Baptiste Tavernier, I said that right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first acquired out of the Gold Candy region in the mid 1600s. At that time, India was the only known source of diamonds in the world, and they haven't yet been discovered in like Brazil and South America and South Africa. So they say all sorts of stories about how diamonds were obtained. The stories had gone back to ancient times, were retold by the likes of people like Marco Polo. And it was Tavernier who actually went to see the diamond mines firsthand and came back with the fullest description of them. He also brought back hundreds of diamonds, often trading them for pearls he acquired in the Middle East along the way. The Indians have very elaborate ideas about gemstones. They believe that gemstones had protective powers, like you talked about earlier. They did not cut gemstones in the way we do. Instead, they tend to preserve as much of the stones as they could. Like you said, they cut out cracks or imperfections. But they believed it maximized their ability to protect one from evil influences. So basically, the idea was that the gems absorb negative influence and that were contained inside the stone. Kind of like a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
So rulers wore a lot of diamonds and other gems, and the bigger the better, which you've seen in, you know, many of the older pictures of, like, you know, the crown jewels and, you know, the, what do they call it, Maharaj or whatever they have the turban on with the giant gemstone right in the middle. And they would also wear smaller talismans with other smaller gems for different protections. Okay, so Dutch and French and many other different countries' merchants flocked to India to procure diamonds, but no one had acquired more gems or made better deals than Tavernier. He made six trips to India between 1630 and 1670, so that was like a span of 40 years. Returning to France after one of those trips in 1668, when he met with Louis XIV of France, newly built. Well, he went to King Louis's palace, the newly built Versailles, Palace of Versailles. It's not Versailles, like they say in Kentucky. It's Versailles. Tavernier sold the king the 112-carat blue diamond along with 200 other diamonds. The big blue diamond was like this rare, incredible gem. The king's artist drew a diagram of the diamonds to record the acquisition. And he looked at it, was thick. It was kind of, I would say diamond shaped, like shape of a diamond, but if you drew like a flat diamond, that was uncut. So he sketched like the top of it, the back of it, and you can see that, we'll, you know, post pictures up. So Louis the 14th, he was called the Sun King. And if you have been to Versailles, which we haven't, but we've seen pictures of it, maybe someday. Yeah, you know, if somebody sponsors our podcast, makes a donation to the show, we can go to France. he viewed his reign as one of enlightenment and of letting in the light to divine kingship, or letting knowledge in and beauty and art shine. So Versailles at that time was full of like glass cut chandeliers and mirrors to reflect light. And he used a lot of like dazzling light in his architecture and decor. So for the diamonds, you know, same thing. He accumulated the greatest collection of crown jewels on the planet. And the European gem cutters were influenced by the Renaissance using optics and geometry to learn how to manipulate light. So he had learned how to cut diamonds predictably, and then they would alter the stone's reflective and refractive purposes. Glad I got that right. To let in the light into the diamond and then let it shine out. So they used diamond dust and a very secret ingredient, olive oil, on the wheel to cut the diamond. Now, can you imagine how nervous that person must have been trying to cut 112-carat blue diamond?
Yeah.
And the king's standing over you probably. So Louis had Tavernier's blue diamond cut down from roughly 112 carats to its symmetrical, beautiful gem of 67 carats. And it sparkled and shined. And people were like, ah. And it was recorded in the royal inventory and renamed the French blue. It was valued at that time. I don't know at what it would have been at that time. But at this time, it would have been like $3.6 million in today's currency. He wore it simply from a ribbon hanging around his neck or in a brooch. From that, the diamond passed down as part of French crown jewels to Kings Louis the 15th and Louis the 16th. These two kings wore the diamond as part of their knightly decoration. Not nightly every night, but night, you know, like I'm a knight of shining armor. And something called the Order of the Golden Fleece. So from that, the diamond was also worn by Marie Antoinette. It was given to her by Napoleon. He was short.
Yeah.
Maybe that was his curse. But they were both imprisoned after an outbreak of the French Revolution, and the crown jewels were put in a warehouse and publicly exhibited in 1792. They were stolen.
Mm-hmm.
So part of that whole cache, the blue diamond, was in there. They tried to recover, but they couldn't find it. So it goes missing. So 20 years later, a smaller 45 carat diamond turns up in London in 1812. So this diamond merchant named Daniel Eliason somehow comes into possession of it. He speculated it was cut down from the French blue because it was 45 carats. And I think that's where it remains now.
Yeah.
He sold it to the British King George IV. And then they called it the George Blue Diamond. And they celebrated that diamond with a trophy defeating Napoleon. He wore the blue diamond in a new golden fleece decoration. The British king, though, was a spendthrift who almost bankrupted the throne.
Mm-hmm.
So after the king's death in 1830, his executor, the Duke of Wellington, had to sell the blue diamond off to pay his debt. So he sold it to Henry Philip Hope, the great diamond collector. Hope set the diamond into a medallion with a hanging pearl and simply called it Diamond Number One. So after some years, it became known as the Hope Diamond. The Hope family was England's wealthiest. They aided the American colonial commerce and helped finance the Louisiana Purchase. They accumulated land, castles, Dutch and Flemish paintings, and all kinds of other riches. And then they squandered all the great wealth. Then, in 1887, the diamond was inherited by Lord Francis Hope, Henry Phillips Hope's great-grandnephew. Francis bet badly on horses, had business enterprises, and American showgirl wife, May Hoey. Yo-ho? Yo-hoey? I don't know. We'll just call her May.
May, yeah.
He lost all his fortune and his wife after a series of court cases allowed him to sell the Hope Diamond. It was purchased by a jeweler named Joseph Frankel's Sons and Company in 1901, and they hoped to make a big profit, so they were just buying it to flip it. They bought the Hope Diamond, and instead of it being overvalued, it sat in their vault. In 1907, there was something called the Banker's Panic. That basically was a recession and it took its toll on the company. So he was rich with diamonds, but poor with cash. So he went bankrupt. Then he, after his failure, newspapers have kind of picked up on the story. Washington and London picked up the story and was just like, you know, kind of hashing it around. And they were blaming the executions of Louis the 16th and Marie Antoinette and Hope's bankruptcy and divorce and Frankel's collapse on the malevolent influence of this blue diamond. So the Hope Diamond was finally sold to, bum, 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 the Cartier brothers of Paris. So Pierre Cartier had enhanced the legend, I guess you would say, mm-hmm. of the novel called The Moonstone. So it was written decades earlier, and the story was of this large yellow diamond that had formed around the eye of an idol and Hindu deity in the temple of India. The diamond was literally embodied the power of God, and there it rested until it was looted by a Muslim conqueror and taken to its treasury. Then years later, British colonial soldiers looted the treasury in battle, taking the diamond back to England. There, tragedy, murder, kidnapping, insanity followed the possession of the ill-gotten gem. So the god had cursed the stone with an evil force that would emanate rays from the stone and strike misfortune upon all those who owned the gem.
Yeah, so that book was actually wrote about the Hope Diamond,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of the stories of the curse was in that book. And a lot of people say he's the one that made up the story about the curse, that there were really no curse. But if you follow the timeline, every single person that owned the diamond either died or had misfortune in their family, or the family members dying,
mm-hmm.
or something.
Yeah. So interesting. So I'll finish a little bit about it, and then Joe can go into the timeline, which
you pretty much, I mean, you're already up to 1909, so. Mm-hmm.
So it was finally, the Hindu priests retrieved the diamond and brought it back home. Now, this story by Collins was basically a cautionary tale about playing with the divine and the supernatural payback of immorality.
And that's where everybody says he made up the actual curse because he wanted to write a book.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea. Like, if it's almost like having a PR person these days, you know, you put an article or a story or a video out and then you're an instant star, right? Like, you have one sex tape out there and you're an instant star, right? Happened to a couple people.
Okay.
Mention their names. Paris Hilton, Kim Kardashian. Okay. So, you know, there's historical and fictional elements to Cartier. Probably took a little license on. But when he approached this American socialite, Evelyn, and her husband Ned McLean in 1910, he had already had a relationship with the immensely wealthy couple. He had sold them a large diamond when they vacationed in Paris after their marriage. He applied the moonstone story to the Hope Diamond in, you know, telling him it was cursed by a Hindu god, and it was embellished a little bit, you know, each time the story came about, blaming the French and the Turkish and other revolutions on the bad influence of the stone. So she was entranced by the story.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, listening to Cartier's story. And then later, she bought the diamond. So they were the richest, one of the richest families in the United States. They owned banks, real estate, and the Washington Post. So, you know, McLean, Virginia is actually named after this family.
Yeah. And
did we go there?
Side note, I don't know if you have it in the notes there, but the house that they live in, it is now an embassy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I think it's the Ethiopian embassy in Washington.
Oh my gosh. So they had, you know, some of the most luxurious real estate, homes in Newport, Rhode Island, Bar Harbor, Maine, Palm Beach, Florida. They lived in that gilded age, you know, like flaunting their money and wasting gigantic fortunes on over-the-top things. So she wore that diamond to extravagant parties. She paraded the diamond around Washington and made it very public until 1919, when it was her 10-year-old son, Vincent, was struck down and killed by a car near their Washington estate. And then the papers picked up on it and said, this diamond is for sure cursed, and wondered who would be next to be struck down by the curse of the Hope Diamond. So it was all of the negative energy that was locked up in the uncut diamond that now had been unleashed on its possessors because of the cutting. So the curse, you know, story of the curse appealed to the public, and it resonated with other cursed stories about the Titanic and the Egyptian mummies and, you know, Howard Carter dying mysteriously after he opened the King Tut's tomb. So the idea of, like, wealthy people flaunting their wealth and obtaining treasures was now they were getting more notoriety because of the higher supernatural powers these items had come about. So the curse was amplified when Ned McLean, he went insane.
Mm-hmm.
His family lost the Washington Post in bankruptcy, and despite Evelyn trying to use the Hope Diamond for collateral for a loan, she actually pawned the Hope Diamond in 1932.
Yeah, she, during the auction of the Washington Post, she was walking around the crowd trying to trade it for her to keep the Washington Post.
That's crazy.
So she's walking around to the bidders going, I'll give you the diamond if you let me keep the Washington Post.
She also tried to use it to track down the kidnappers of the Charles Lindbergh baby. And the remaining money was used for a possible ransom. The money wasn't needed, however, and she got the diamond back. So over the years, she used the diamond for charitable purposes, like a social grand maven. She would hold, you know, things for people to see it, or win a raffle ticket to come see it. And then you were telling me a story about she lent it to somebody.
Yeah. She was really big into helping the soldiers. And during the war, she would have the soldiers over and have parties, when she would invite the women from the neighborhood to come and party with the soldiers that are in town. And one of the girls was getting married, and she actually let the girl wear the Hope Diamond during her wedding. Well, during her wedding, when they walked into the church, it was bright and sunny out. storm clouds came in. The church actually got struck by lightning.
Oh, my God.
And they said that after the service was done, everybody went outside because, you know, mm-hmm. the church got struck by lightning. And it was bright and sunny out.
So interesting. So the
storm came, got struck by lightning, came outside, the storm was gone. And they said that's part of the curse.
So, yeah, it's so interesting. Now, she wrote in her autobiography that she expressed, you know, ambivalence about the Hope Diamond and poo-pooing the curse and wondered if the curse was payback for the money and time misspent and frittered away. But in 1946, her daughter committed suicide, and then she ended up dying in 1947, and the estate sold the Hope Diamond to Harry Winston, who was a famous jeweler, American jeweler. And then 10 years later, the diamond came to the Smithsonian. So like any other object in the Smithsonian, the Hope Diamond is object number 217868. It came with a crafted by Cartier, one of a kind, like 16 1.5 carat diamonds surrounding the main blue stone. So the necklace is 42 diamonds set in platinum. And it weighs right now 45.52 carats. And tell everybody how it got to the Smithsonian.
Well, he donated it. One of the things, you know, the curse. It was actually delivered by the post office. And I'm looking at the picture of the box itself. It's just a brown box, but it has like 15 postage stamps on it.
Must have weighed a lot.
It must have weighed a lot. But the thing about it is the postman that delivered it actually died in mysterious circumstances. Mm-hmm. And they say that he is the last person to die of the curse of the Hope Diamond. And the diamond right now, as it sits in the Smithsonian, is an estimated value at $200 to $350 million.
Wow.
So if you hit the lotto, you might be able to buy it.
Oh, man.
But the timeline, you know, you basically went through the whole timeline, and you have to remember that every single person that owned this diamond had some tragedy to them. Marie Antoinette beheaded. Louis the 14th, I think it was, he wasn't the one that was beheaded, was he?
I don't know.
Okay, but one of the two, either Louis the 14th or the 15th, he actually got a small infection on his foot and died of gangrene.
Oh, my gosh.
Very painful death, but as you go through, you know, there's so many deaths recorded because of people that own this diamond.
Yeah.
So some of the people that are noted, like we said, Louis the 14th and Louis the 15th, Marie Antoinette, the person that originally had it, Jean-Baptiste. Now they're saying that he stole the diamond out of that relic, but a lot of people that know him said that he would never steal. He had, like you said, he went back several times and got a lot of diamonds, so he actually purchased it.
Mm-hmm.
He died, and after he died, his body was ravaged by wolves.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Okay, so Nicholas Fouquet, who worked for Louis the 15th, he died, and a lot of people believe he was the original man in the Iron Mask.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Leo mm-hmm. DiCaprio was in that movie. It's the only reason I know. Napoleon, lost.
Yes.
And Josephine, they were exiled somewhere, I think.
William Falls, his son ended up murdering him and then killing himself. And then Evelyn Walsh McLean, so many things happened to her, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just, it goes on and on. Like, and then the postman, James Todd, who delivered it, he died because his leg was crushed under a truck during an accident.
Oh my God.
So he was the last person that died because of the curse.
That's crazy. And, you know, the funny thing is people often mistake that with the sapphire, the heart shape, the blue heart, you know, like from Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 423 carat Logan sapphire that was donated to the Napoleon necklace, which is also, there's a 31 carat blue heart diamond necklace. So, you know, people often confuse the Hope Diamond and that because they're both blue, but one's a sapphire, one's a diamond. So.
Yeah, the heart-shaped one is a little smaller, too.
Yeah. When I went to London, my friend Tammy and I, we went to London. Oh, gosh, that's probably been 20 years now. Yeah, I think it was 20 years ago. We went and saw the crown jewels at the Tower of London. unbelievable. Like the big diamond that's on top of the that staff that they have, I think it was on top of the staff, was the size of a baseball.
Oh.
And it was so sparkly. Like it just like it was so bright. You were just like that, oh, your mouth's open, you know? And they had all of like the crowns, the royal crowns, and you couldn't stop and like look at them. You were on a conveyor belt that makes the people go by it. So you can't stop and look at it. It was really weird. And there was like all this like, you know, giant glass cases that they're in and stuff, but they were huge. Huge. Like it just didn't even look real.
Yeah.
It was so shiny and sparkly. There was like rubies and diamonds and emeralds and sapphires. And what's the yellow one? Might have been a yellow diamond.
Okay.
Is there a yellow gemstone? Yeah.
Yellow diamond.
Yeah. But pearls, mm-hmm. like size of grapes and like just crazy. Like it looks heavy.
Yeah.
You know, like the crown itself. Then you got all these gemstones and diamonds and stuff on it. And I'm like, holy shit, how do you wear that?
So now that it's in the Smithsonian, I wonder if they're getting any kind of activity from it, whether it's, you know, because if you think about it, if there is a curse and all these people have died because of the curse, you would think that there'd be some kind of residual haunting around it.
Yeah.
And if it, you know, I mean, does it absorb the energy of all the people that it cursed?
I would think so. I would absolutely think so, because it just doesn't dissipate.
Yeah. And the whole thing behind the original part of the diamond was it was not cut so that it would absorb the energy. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it absorbs the negative energy. And then once it was cut, that negative energy is just like a jack in the box. It just springs out.
Yeah. So oh my gosh.
I'm just wondering if there's any kind of hauntings going around it. But I do know that it's in like 4-inch thick bulletproof glass.
Oh, wow. You wouldn't expect anything less.
I know.
You know, when you have a $350 million piece of jewelry sitting there.
On display.
Yeah.
So anybody can just walk up and look at it. I've seen a lot of video of it over the past couple of days since I've been studying up on it, because I honestly didn't know anything about it. I mean, I've heard the stories, but I didn't really know much about it. So I've been really researching it and watching movies or TV shows and YouTube videos about it. But it's on display and it sits there and it has the diamond. It has the diamonds around it. It has the rubies on it. And it's got like a long chain that they have wrapped over the mount that it's sitting on. Oh, and it's spinning so you can see all the diamonds.
Oh, so cool. I went somewhere one time. It was in a museum. And I don't know if I was with you or where was that. And I can't remember. But I remember we went. It might have been with Tammy. We might have been in England or Ireland. I can't remember. And we went to the museum. It might have been the British Museum, and we were looking at jewelry and gemstones, and there was some Tiffany diamonds, and we saw this red diamond, and it was in a piece of jewelry, kind of like Art Deco jewelry, probably from the 20s, and it wasn't that big. It was maybe this half the size of a pea or something. This thing was shining so brightly.
Really?
I'm like, this is crazy. I've never seen a red, and it was deep. It was like ruby red, but it was a diamond, you know? Yeah. It was so cool. I was like, wow, it's no wonder that people like think something like that has magical powers. Because you can imagine like being in the 1600s and find something and maybe accidentally cracking it or something. And all of a sudden it's like bursting light out of it, you know, like, or like maybe the Aztecs or somebody, you know, discovering this shiny gold stuff. What is this gold stuff? But yeah, I mean, wars have been fought over items like jewels and gems, and you know, people have died and blood has been spilled over this stuff. So
now I don't remember which person it was, but when the born person passed away, they actually went in and his collection, the diamond was part of his collection, and they could not figure out what to do with it because it was in the middle of the night and the banks were closed and they couldn't hide it anywhere. So they actually took it to the president's house.
Oh, my gosh.
And I don't remember if it was Eisenhower or who, but they took it to the president's house, and they said it's the only place that it could be secure enough where no one would steal the diamond.
That is so interesting.
And then the banks opened up in the morning, and one of the bankers took it and put it in his bank.
Wow.
And I'm sorry I don't remember the names, but
What a fascinating story.
I mean, you're talking since the 1600s when they first found this diamond and put it. And the thing is, it was never said that they actually found it in the 1600s because they were digging up diamonds all the way back to the 800 BC. Yeah. So this thing could have been dug up in the 800 BC and put in that relic. And then Jean Baptiste went in the 1631 and found that diamond in that sculpture. So that could have been there longer.
And just think, you know, people were praying to that deity. Mm-hmm. So all of their thoughts and intentions are going in to this stone. And then for it to be
either stolen or cut.
Releasing all of it.
That's like we were just saying a few minutes ago. The reason they put it in the deity or in the statue is to absorb the negative energy. And then they cut it and it sprung open and
unleashed
demons everywhere.
In America. But, just fascinating. I don't know. I just, you know, it's not really a ghost story or paranormal, but
it is kind of paranormal.
It's
because
just so interesting.
It's a curse.
Yeah. Of all those people, I mean, like, people, kids got maimed and committed suicide and, you know, people got run over and there was, what was the one guy you were saying? He got an infection and died. You know, it's like
Louis XIV or the 15th. I'm not sure the exact one.
And who knows how many hands exchanged that were not record, you know, like what happened to the person who dug it out of the mine.
Yeah.
You know?
And during my research, I did see where they were going through the timeline. It disappeared for a long time, like we said, I believe in 1813, and they couldn't find it for 20 years. And they said during that 20 years, who knows where it was. I do know that it was found in someone's collection as if just in a drawer somewhere.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine?
I just all the royalty that owned this diamond.
Yeah, and it's just a stone.
Mm-hmm.
The value is in people's perception of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it came from the earth, so it's that you could hold the rock in your hand or you could hold the diamond in your hand. It's still just a stone.
Yeah.
But now it's, I don't know, it's just, and to me it's just weird. It's just like somebody who's famous. Oh, they're famous, but he's still a person.
Yeah.
I'm a person, you're a person. We both have bleed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know.
And the history of this started in the 1600s and they kept track of every, except for the 20 years it disappeared, they kept track of every single person that owned it and where it was at.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking a rock that somebody...
That came out of the earth. It took a billion years to...
To make.
To create.
Yeah.
And then this whole lineage of the history of it.
The history of it. And it's still going on because it's in the Smithsonian.
Well, you know, I was thinking about like what you said, you know, like if there's any paranormal activity, there's so many artifacts in the Smithsonian. How can it not be?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's mummies, there's everything in there. Like
the giants that they took.
We need to ask them about that.
Yeah.
We want answers. Freedom of Information Act 2020. Yeah, fascinating, you know, like everybody thinks Elizabeth Taylor owned this diamond, but she didn't. She's just associated with it because, you know, Richard Burton had bought her so many giant gemstones, which I think some of hers might have been on display at the Smithsonian at one time. But she had some giant emerald teardrop-shaped earrings he gave her. They were just enormous. I read that in her autobiography. It was very interesting. And she had a very cursed life, too. They said this was, you know, a light blue diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And originally they would call it violet. But back in those days, violet was another term for blue.
Yeah.
And her eyes were blue, but they were so blue they were violet colored.
Okay.
Which I just thought that was interesting. So it would have been interesting if they would have put that diamond up against her eyes. Just compare, I don't know.
It's funny because Evelyn Walsh McLean would wear it every single day. Not just as a showpiece, but she was a very showy. Yeah. she actually put it on her dog, and the dog actually wore it also.
Ooh, million-dollar pooch.
Who knows what happened to the poodle, you know?
If I owned it, I'd probably wear it every day, too. Like, look at me. I got a $400 million diamond around my neck.
Yeah, and she wore it every day just like regular
costume jewelry.
How
would nobody try to steal it?
I know.
Because she would have to have bodyguards.
It's cursed.
Yeah.
Do you want to steal a stolen, cursed?
Maybe that was part of the like security of it.
Yeah.
People are very superstitious too around that time. But yeah, like fascinating. I love this kind of stuff. Like this and, you know, the curse of the, remember we did the curse of the vampire crypt?
Yeah.
You know, curses throughout centuries mm-hmm. have been, you know, very mystical and mysterious and scary. And people are very, especially the gypsy culture, they're very big into curses. You don't want to get cursed by gypsies.
No. Uh-uh.
It's hard to break that. But
but yeah, we just thought, when Jen brought this topic up, I was like, yeah, let's do it, you know. And lots of times you can go on YouTube and watch the actual timeline of it and that. But we kind of jumped around, but that's our show. That's the way we do things because we get confused. And
we're old. We're old now, Joe.
We're old.
We're old and chunky. Yes, this quarantine has not done well with our weight.
I'm still working.
I've been stress eating. If you guys think of any other really interesting curses, I'll leave it on our Facebook
page. Yeah, if there's any topics that you want us to cover, just let us know.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyways, thanks for tuning in this week, folks. And
we enjoyed coming to you through the podcast. Thanks for listening. You know, share our show. It's free. Anybody can listen at any time. There's 201 episodes for your listening pleasure.
All right, so let's leave with a little Black Friday holiday from Dead in 5. Goodbye, everyone.
Have a good week. Looking for a man